When Joe Eckelson asked me to talk to the group a few days before Armistice Day to tell my stories of one of my stories of World War I, I could not possibly refuse. That would have been very unpatriotic, to say the least. So here I am. When I was a youngster way, way back, there were still a few Civil War veterans around, and of course many Spanish-American War veterans. And when I was at school, in my junior year, I roomed with a proctor of the university who was a veteran of the Indian Wars, a member of Custer's army that was not annihilated. Whenever these people told me stories of their experiences, I was very much interested. And since practically all of you were just a glint in the eyes of your parents at the time of World War I, I hope you will be interested in my story. When I was, when the war broke out, in 1917, President Wilson's fiery oratory just enthused the whole country in favor of the war, and practically every student in the universities tried for the first officers training corps at Plattsburgh, New York. And I was among them. When I took my physical, despite the fact that I ate about 6 bananas, they found that I was 4 pounds underweight, which ruled me out. Later on, these strict rules were relaxed, and it was not so as difficult to get into these camps. So I immediately volunteered for service in the sanitary corps and also in the medical corps with the idea of making use of my training in the Army. I also, at the time, accepted an assistancy in the botany department at the University of Michigan, where at the end of the year I was given a master's degree. And I heard nothing about the Army until the following May of 1918, when I received 3 sets of Army induction papers, one for the draft, one for the medical corps, and one for the sanitary corps. I had these papers right here with you as proof. So I immediately went home. I had a couple of weeks before going into the Army, I presented first the draft papers to the draft board and showed them the other papers, which of course I prefer to use. But the president of the draft board said, look, the date of our papers preceded those of the other papers by a few days. So we must first fill our quota. Little did I suspect that was his main objective. The devil take the hindmost for the rest of them. But what happened was that I followed his instructions, and what I should have done was to disregard him and just use my papers for induction into the Army, where I was for the sanitary corps, where I was ordered to go to Yale for a preliminary course, and in 3 or 4 weeks I would have received my commission. But I thought, well, I'd better follow the draft board's instructions. It seemed logical if you consider the dates. And according to the president of the board, as soon as I showed my other papers to them, they would shoot me right up to Yale. Well, I still have these papers in the archives, and I never was able to make them good. I went down to Spartanburg. I was shipped down to Spartanburg, South Carolina. And in 4 weeks after training in the tropical sun in the month of July, we were shipped back to the port of embarkation in New York, put on a transport, and zigzagged across the Atlantic Ocean, zigzagging to avoid enemy submarines, and landed at Brest in France. Within another week, we were put on the 48 animal boxcars and shipped eastward to the front. By that time, Battle of Chateau Ferry had been fought, the point which was closest to Paris that the Germans got in that war. They were still cleaning up the debris of the Battle of Chateau Ferry. We landed in the midst of the Battle of the Argonne within a few days, and were placed right between the first and second lines of the army of the battle. Luckily, the Germans were retreating rapidly, and we were not in too much danger. But living conditions was another story. In the Battle of the Argonne during the rainy season, it drizzled and rained without a stop for months at a time, and the mud was knee-deep along the roads. No food was allowed to come to the front. The order being given, only ammunition trains were to proceed on these roads. So that at one time, during a 48-hour period, soldiers received just a dog biscuit and a little water in their canteens. And that was it. When that for a hot bowl of soup at a French kitchen, might have died of starvation or caught pneumonia, and sleeping conditions were very bad. But you didn't sleep. If you remember that this was a trench war, and if you didn't sleep underground, the cops provided, you selected a shell hole so as to avoid the danger from artillery, if possible, because the artillery was shooting right over our heads. in our position. One day, we had in our outfit an old cranky army sergeant who had been in the army for about 20 or 30 years, whom we all detested. And one day, while repairing roads at the front so as to make them passable, this army sergeant selected me to remove the water in a shell hole in the middle of the road and throw this water over an embankment 6 feet high with a flat shovel. And I protested and said, let me get an empty tin can or something and bail the water out. But no, he insisted that I do it just that way with a flat shovel, which was impossible, an impossible task. And I was irritated enough to tell him that to disobey his orders and threw my shovel down and said, I won't do it. Whereupon he threatened to report me to the skipper. The captain of the company. Well, I paid no attention to that. However, while we were eating lunch that day, a special messenger came out from company headquarters, and the messenger told me that Captain wanted to see me right away. Almost sank through the ground, and I said to myself that SOB actually turned me in as he promised to do. And I walked back to company headquarters about a mile and a half, thinking that I really had committed a serious crime, because to disobey an officer at the front of time of war, shot at sunrise. And when I did come into the company headquarters, all of the officers and sergeants jumped out of their seats and shook my hand, congratulating me. And I was so dumbfounded with surprise that I couldn't say a word. It turned out that the captain received a telegram from company headquarters, army headquarters, signed by General Pershing, ordering me to take an examination for a commission in the city of Blois, B-L-O-I-S, in the west of France. Now let me go back a little. Before reporting for service in the army, I must tell you about what happened. My sister had a job in the law division of customs, and her superior was a classmate by the name of Mulvaney, was a classmate of Mr. Tumulty, a secretary to President Wilson in the White House. When my sister told him my story and my efforts to get into special service, he was kind enough to write a letter to his classmate, asking him to kind of do what he can for me to see when I entered the proper service. I went down to Washington and had an interview, and Mr. Tumulty promised to do what he can. I heard that President Wilson talking to someone in the Oval Office behind closed doors. And Mrs. Webster, 21 years of age, that in itself was quite a thrill. However, As I said, I entered the army, heard nothing about it, found myself at the front in the Battle of Yarden, and then this telephone arrived. I couldn't get out of the outfit fast enough. The major of our regiment took me by jeep to the railroad station for the Narrow Gauge Railroad. And I boarded the train for Bar-le-Duc, a town in eastern France where I was to catch the regular gauge railroad, one of the main lines in France, or Paris. I was not supposed to go to Paris, as American soldiers were always routed around Paris. They didn't want any of them in the city itself during the war. But I was not supposed to have the first opportunity of seeing Paris. I arrived at Bar-le-Duc about 11 o'clock at night, and an American soldier befriended me and asked me where I was going, whether he would take me there, and giving me great tickets, which were scarce at that time during the war. And after a short walk, I arrived at the main station for the main railroad to go to Paris. He said, put your packing belongings down, get into line for your ticket, I'll take care of it, and help me in every way possible. And I did just that. But when I returned, after buying my ticket, I found the American soldier gone, together with my packing belongings. And I just had suit on my uniform on my back. However, I boarded the train to Paris as I was. Unbelievable. I landed in Paris, right smack on Armistice Day. From the mud of France, from the mud of the Battle of the Argonne, to the wonderful city of Paris. Now, that day was indescribable. Pandemonium broke loose. Soldiers from all nations of the world seemed to gather in Paris, marching down the Champs-Élysées, one of the main thoroughfares of Paris. Men and women hugging the soldiers, and it was really something to see. Celebration is tremendous. To give you an idea of how the French felt at the time, I went into a restaurant for lunch and decided to table with two Red Cross officers. And at the next table, was a family of French people. And I have to would be able to help the difficult position, a busser or something of that kind, and we'd take all the time and send it French for what the Americans have done for France. I would consider it an honor to treat you to a fuck-a-shack. And sure enough, he ordered a bottle of champagne for us. But since the two Red Cross officers did not drink, I had the whole bottle for myself. So, that gives you an idea about how the French felt about us at that time. My pass for Paris ordered me to take the train for Rouen going west within 6 hours. But I was not going to leave Paris within 6 hours, rather, going to case with my pharmacist then. So I thought I'd stay an extra day. And the next morning when I tried to get out of Paris, sure enough, one of these MPs crawled out of the woodwork, wanted to see my papers and said, "But you were supposed to leave here 24 hours ago." And he arrested me, brought me to the desk of the officer in charge at the railroad station. And the officer asked, "How come, Sergeant, we didn't leave 24 hours ago?" Well, when you're in the army, you live by using your wits. Immediately, the story of my stolen belongings came to mind, which happened in Bar-le-Duc, 110 miles away. So I said to the officer, "I was going to leave on time, and I told the story of how my belongings were stolen, leaving out, of course, that it happened elsewhere, making believe that it happened in this railroad station." So the officer banged his fist on his desk, bawled his sergeant who arrested me out of good and proper, telling him that it was the sixth case of this kind that happened at that railroad station, and that it must stop, and wrote out a pass for me to take the next train for Bois. Little did I know that I barely escaped getting into the clutches of Hard-Boiled Smith, who was in charge of American prisoners in Paris, who abused them terribly by stealing their belongings and beating them up, and who was later indicted for his misdeeds after the war. I boarded the train for Blois, reported to the committee for examining soldiers with commissions. The chairman of the committee telegraphed promptly to Pershing's headquarters at Chaumont in France, asking in view of the armistice whether he should proceed with the examination. He was told to do so since I was already there, and I had the distinction of being the very last man in aid to be there to be accepted for the commission. I hurried back to my outfit at the front, and after running to be absent when my commission arrived there, I passed the examination. But I heard nothing about it. since it takes quite a long time to send an army of four million men back to the States. The army allowed soldiers who had at least 2 years training in universities in the States to attend special courses at French and British universities. Took advantage of that, knowing that my outfit would probably be the last one to leave France. And I thought I could spend I couldn't spend my time better than attending at French university. It happened, this is a story in itself, that I actually attended two universities. The University of Toulouse, the University of Montpellier. And that is another distinction. I probably was the only soldier in the army who attended two universities. After this was over, I found out that the records or commissions were kept at Chartres in France. Since this was on the way to the place of embarkation, I decided to go to AWOL and find out what happened to my commission. I was told that I had passed, that I was recommended for a commission in the reserve. When I got back to the States, I applied for this and was made a second lieutenant, promoted to first lieutenant a short time after, and was placed in charge of the water supply of the 77th Division. Then I met my wife, Irene, and we were married, but she was adamant about going to camp for 2 weeks, which was required of all reserve officers. She did not want to do that. So I was forced to resign, and that was just too bad. Because I might have been a four-star general by this time, if it were not for that. Just like Phyllis Springs, I would have been a general in the army. That, in a nutshell, is my story of my service in the army during World War I.